Tonight I'm going to be talking about legacy. Legacy. What is your legacy? What is my legacy? What do we want our legacies to be? And that's something that, I guess as the older you get, the more you think about. People want to establish, this is the mark that I left on the world. This is what I did with the things that I had. The things that I accumulated, I was able to make this mark on the world, and I will be remembered for these things. Claire Luce said, to every man, no matter how great, history gives them one sentence. Only one sentence. For example, Lincoln freed the slaves. Washington founded a nation. Alexander conquered the world. No matter how great you are, history will only tolerate you having one sentence remembered about you. The question becomes, what do we want that sentence to be for ourselves? When people are standing over my grave, when they're looking at that casket, what do I want them to say about Matthew? Well, Matthew, man, he accumulated so much wealth. Or he was so funny. Or he was so good with money. What do I want them to say? What do you think will matter to me in that point? And yes, I think I will have some idea of what's going on at that point, or at least in the point in the future to come. What do I want people to remember me by? You know, this reminds me of, it's a danger to quote poetry from memory, but this reminds me of what Lord Byron said. As he's standing over a graveside, and he says, here lies the remains of someone who possessed beauty without vanity, strength without insolence, and courage without ferocity, and all the virtues of man with none of his vices. What a thing to be said about somebody. Could somebody say that about you? Now, he was talking about his dog, he may have been going a little overboard there, but it's actually kind of true. Dogs are beautiful, yet they don't look at themselves in the mirror all day. Dogs are strong, yet they're some of the gentlest creatures. And some dogs, not all dogs, will protect you to their own hurt. They will lay down their lives for you. But what do we want to be said of us? And we see here in Matthew 25 that when the day comes, when Jesus comes in glory by and by, there's only going to be one thing that remains. The only thing that can be said about us that matters is, are you blessed of God? Or are you cursed? Well done, good and faithful servant. Or depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. That is the only legacy that matters. What side are you on, the left or the right? And we're going to explore this through the lens of one of the kings of the Old Testament. If you remember, as the Old Testament is talking about the history of Israel. And what happens when a king dies? What's the thing that is said? What's the most important thing? He did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, or he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord? Transpose that for a moment to our current time. And is that how we remember our presidents? I've already mentioned two presidents. That's the last thing that comes to our mind. Washington did this. Washington founded the nation. While Washington was able, he had the self-control to neglect from taking over as a new king. He's to be lauded. He's to be praised. Lincoln was able to do X, Y, and Z. All these great presidents, and we think about all the great things they did, but we don't think, because it's very far from our minds, was this a righteous man? Was this someone who did what's right in the sight of God or what's evil in the sight of God? And as the Bible makes clear, that's the only thing that's going to matter. All the other things may be interesting. They're like a dream. Like if you tell me one of your dreams, it might be interesting for you to tell me. It might even be interesting for me to hear it. But it's going to pass away. The dream is gone. It's of no use. There's only one thing that remains, and it is, did you do that which was right in God's sight, or did you do that which was evil in God's sight? Because that is going to determine where you spend eternity. Okay, what king are we going to look at tonight? We're actually going to look at a pagan king. In Daniel chapter, now that could be any of the kings of Israel, but in Daniel chapter 5, we're going to look at Belshazzar. Belshazzar, and this is quite a famous story, story that's taught in many a Sunday school. The writing is on the wall. The writing is on the wall. In verse 1 of Daniel chapter 5, in verse 1 of Daniel chapter 5, Belshazzar the king held a great feast for 1,000 of his nobles, and he was drinking wine in the presence of the 1,000. Now think about that for just a minute. How much money, how much power would that take to be able to hold a feast like that? That is a power play. I've got so much excess, I can have a feast and I can feed 1,000 people. It's no sweat off my back. It's easy. And when Belshazzar tasted the wine, he gave orders to bring the gold, silver vessels, which Nebuchadnezzar, his father, it would actually be his, this is father in the sense of his ancestor, not too far of an ancestor, just two levels there, but it's not his actual father, it's his relative. His father had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem so that the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. You know, you think about that. Not only am I having a feast for 1,000 people, but me and my posse, we want some special vessels. This wine is good. We need something special to drink it out of. Wasn't there some little backwoods country we conquered a while ago? Can we bring their stuff in here? The holy items of God that it's strictly prohibited to do any such thing with, bring them in here for our enjoyment. Let's profane these things. That's the idea of profane. I'm going to make them common. These are special, holy, set apart things. We're going to use them for our party cups. Profanity. Verse 3, then they brought the gold vessels that had been taken out of the temple, the house of God which was in Jerusalem, and the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines drank from them. They drank the wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. So what's his idea? Well, there must not be much to this God because, well, where were these things? They were in our storehouse. How were they there? We conquered them. Well, why didn't he stop us? Well, there must not be anything to it. So we're going to take these, and we're going to use them as our party cups, and we're going to praise our gods. Now, Daniel here just says the gods of gold, and he doesn't even give them names. Of course, this would probably be outrageous to call them gods of gold and silver and wood and so on and so forth. No, that one has a name. That one has a history. That one has many followers. You call it by its name. That one, too, has a name. Daniel just says, the gold ones, the silver ones, the wood ones, the stone ones, whatever, they're not real. They're just, you remember the story of when a plague broke out and Moses had to lift up the serpent for all the people to look on it, and whoever looked at it was cured. And later that, That's brought up in John chapter 3 before the most famous passage in the Bible, John 3:16. But anyway, later in the Bible it's told that the people started to worship that thing. They said, that's a special thing. And it's called Nehushtan. It's just a piece of brass. It's just a piece of brass. There's nothing special about it. It's just a piece of brass. You might find the same piece of brass under a mountain. There's nothing special. Don't be so easily fooled. But they're praising these gods of gold and silver and bronze and wood and stone. They have no hands. They can't get up. They can't defend themselves. They can do nothing, but we're praising them. You know, the golden calf. Isn't that outrageous to think? Well, we're going to praise this calf. You know, an hour ago it was my earring, but now it's inferred some power. Ludicrous. What happens during this? Verse 5. Suddenly the fingers of a man's hand emerged and began writing opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall, tearing into the wall. Writing on the wall, literally writing, not with ink, but tearing into the plaster of the wall. Lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace, and the king saw the back of the hand, but didn't, of the hand that did the writing, and the king's face grew pale. You can imagine, that would be quite a spooky scene, wouldn't it? And his thoughts alarmed him, and his hip joints went slack, and his knees began knocking together. Now this reminds you of the old cartoons, where, you know, they're very dramatized, and the knees going back and forth. What's that a sign of? Would you say that's a sign of power? Of strength? A sign that you have everything under control, that there's nothing that is outside of your control. No, it's a sign that you've just realized maybe you're not as powerful as you thought you were. Maybe you're not at the top of the mountain as you thought you were. Maybe you're not at the top of the food chain as you thought you were. He grew pale, his thoughts alarmed him, and his hip joints went slack. He became quite weak, quite fast. Verse 7, the king called aloud to bring in the conjurers, the Chaldeans and the diviners. The king spoke and said to the wise men of Babylon, any man who can read this inscription and explain its interpretation to me shall be clothed with purple, a royal color reserved for royalty, or probably whoever had enough money, and have a necklace of gold around his neck, and have authority as third ruler in the kingdom. Now, there's interesting historical things around that third ruler. We're not going to get into that, but it corroborates with what history actually tells us. For a long time, people thought that's nonsense, but recent discoveries have said, yes, the third ruler makes sense here. So he sees this terrifying scene of a hand, apparently floating, carving into his wall as he's having this... He's having this riotous party, and he says what anybody would say. We need some help. Get some help in here. We need somebody to figure this out. Call in the experts. We need some experts. We need some wise men, some people who know what they're talking about. Bring them on in here. And let me give you a bounty. Let me give you an incentive. You want something done, you give people incentives. Let me give you an incentive. What kind of incentive are we talking about? Any man, I don't care who you are, I don't care if you're the most senior, I don't care if you're the most junior, I just want results. Any man who can read this inscription and explain its interpretation to me shall be clothed with purple and have a necklace of gold around his neck and have authority as third ruler in the kingdom. Then all the king's wise men came in, but they could not read the inscription or make known its interpretation to the king. The king Belshazzar was greatly alarmed. These people are not even making an effort. It's so out of their league, they're not even doing anything. They probably fear saying something that's obviously false, because, you know, you'll be killed. But they're not even making an attempt to fool me. They have no idea what this is.
The king Belshazzar was greatly alarmed. His face grew even paler, and his nobles were perplexed. The queen entered the banquet. This is probably the queen mother, not one of his wives, but someone who had some previous experience with the recent past. The queen entered the banquet hall because of the words of the king and his nobles. The queen spoke and said, "O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts alarm you or your face be pale. There's a man in your kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of your father, illumination, insight, and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father, the king, appointed him chief of the magicians, conjurers, Chaldeans, and diviners." This was because an extraordinary spirit, knowledge and insight, interpretation of dreams, explanation of enigmas, and solving of difficult problems were found in Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Let Daniel now be summoned, and he will declare the interpretation. So the queen says, there's someone who has an extraordinary gift for answering difficult problems. If you've ever, worked in an office or something along those lines, you might know that that's usually how things go. If you've ever had somebody come over that has a company and they're working on something, and there's a tough problem that comes up, they'll say, "Oh, I know who we need to call. Oh, I know who we need to get to look at this." There's someone who has a reputation for being able to conquer the most difficult problems. This Daniel is such a man. Now she says it's because he has the spirit of the gods. She's obviously a pagan. But it's actually that he has the spirit of the one and true living God. That's why he was so spectacular. That's why he was so set apart from all the other Chaldeans, from all the other conjurers, from all the other pagans. Verse 13, then Daniel was brought in before the king. The king spoke and said to Daniel, "Are you Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, a foreigner, whom my father the king brought from Judah? Now I've heard that you have a spirit of the gods in you, and that illumination, insight, and extraordinary wisdom have been found in you. Just now the wise men and the conjurers were brought in before me that they might read this inscription and make its interpretation known to me, but they could not declare me the interpretation of the message. But I personally have heard about you, that you are able to give interpretations and solve difficult problems. Now, if you are able to read the inscription and make its interpretation known to me, you will be clothed with purple and wear a necklace of gold around your neck, and you will have authority as the third ruler in the kingdom." What an incentive. You're going to be the third most powerful person in the kingdom. You're going to have this purple garment. I'm going to lift you up. I'm going to raise you up on eagle's wings. And everyone's going to look at you and say, "Wow, Daniel, amazing." And any normal person would say, "Oh man, this is going to be great for my legacy. This is going to be absolutely fantastic for my legacy. I'm going to have all these riches. I'm going to have this title. I'm going to have this power. I'm going to have this honor. I'm going to have this glory. People are going to remember this for as long as history is recorded." What's Daniel's response? Then Daniel answered and said before the king, "Keep your gifts for yourself, or give your rewards to someone else." What an answer. What an answer. So I'm basically offering you the world. The most powerful nation in the world. You get to jump all these steps. People work their whole lives stabbing each other in the back to get up the ladder. I'm giving it to you on a golden platter, and you say, "No, thank you. Keep it for yourself." It reminds me of what Paul says to, or what Peter says to Simon the sorcerer, "Your gold and your silver perish with you." And think about this, think about the juxtaposition here. Who really has power here? Who really is in need here? It would seem, from a worldly point of view, who has the power? It would seem that Belshazzar has the power because he's the king. He's able to throw these feasts. He's able to call in the golden vessels. He's able to do all these things. He's the head of the most powerful nation in the world, but he can be so easily converted into a quibbling mess that can't even stand up straight, that can't stop his knees from banging against one another, that can't have strength, that doesn't have any strength in his hips because of his fear. The one with true strength is Daniel. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, "Keep your gifts for yourself. That's not a currency I work in. Or give your rewards to someone else. However, I'm not just going to take my ball and play somewhere else. However, I will read the inscription to the king and make the interpretation known to him. O king, the Most High God granted sovereignty, grandeur, glory, and majesty to Nebuchadnezzar, your father." You know, have you ever thought, Belshazzar, why you are where you are? You're just here because of nepotism. You happen to be born to the right person. But let me tell you why your father was so great. Your father was so great, why? Because the Most High God granted sovereignty, grandeur, glory, and majesty to Nebuchadnezzar. Something that Nebuchadnezzar himself said, that's absolutely true. On several occasions. Because of the grandeur which he bestowed on him, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language feared and trembled before him. You remember what Nebuchadnezzar said? No. After Nebuchadnezzar saw what God could do, he said, nobody better talk bad about the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or the God of Daniel. Have some respect, have some fear, have some trembling. O king, the Most High God granted sovereignty, grandeur, glory, and majesty to Nebuchadnezzar, your father, because of the grandeur which he bestowed on him, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language feared and trembled before him. Whomever he wished, he killed, and whomever he wished, he spared alive. Think about what kind of power that is. You know, people think they have power because I'm your boss. Or I've got power because I'm the head of the HOA. That fence isn't the right color. You need to change that fence. What's real power? I feel like you should die today. Or I feel like I'm going to spare you today. Why are you living? Because I allowed it. Why are you dying? Because I said so. That's power. And whomever he wished, he elevated. And whomever he wished, he humbled. Sounds a lot like God. Of course, God was the one who was pulling the strings. But when his heart was lifted up in his spirit, when he forgot that God is actually the one pulling the strings, and he thought, hey, maybe this really is me. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit became so proud that he behaved arrogantly, he was deposed from his royal throne and his glory was taken away from him. He was also driven away from mankind and his heart was made like that of beast, and his dwelling place was with the wild donkeys. He was given grass to eat like cattle. What was his feast? You know, the famous story of Daniel rejecting all the dainties of the king. Well, there's not going to be any dainties out here. You're going to eat grass like an animal. And you're going to remember. It's going to actually be good for you. It is a punishment, but it's a punishment to lead you to a better place. You're going to learn a lot from this. And his dwelling place was with the wild donkeys. He was given grass to eat like cattle, and his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he recognized that the Most High God is ruler over the realm of mankind and that he sets over it whomever he wishes. Yet you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, even though you knew all this. You have no excuse. You knew this story. Of course a story like this is going to go around. You knew this story. You have no excuse. You looked at it and said, no, I maybe Nebuchadnezzar wasn't so great, but I certainly am greater than he. I have no need of this God. It reminds me of what the famous scientist said when asked about the existence of God. He said, I have no need of that hypothesis. I have no need of God. Look at all the power I have. Look at all the power I wield. Why would I put God into this picture? You've exalted yourself, verse 23. What's the Bible make abundantly clear? If you exalt yourself, God is going to humble you. If you humble yourself, God is going to exalt you. We see that throughout the book of Daniel. But you exalted yourself, guess what's about to happen? God's about to humble you. Against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house. Does Daniel know what's happening? Does he know what's been going on here? Does he know that this profanity has been taking place? And that this Belshazzar, this quibbling mess, has brought in the holy vessels to drink out of as if they were common? And they have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your nobles, your wives and your concubines have been drinking wine from them, and you have praised the gods of silver and gold and of bronze and wood and stone, which did not see, hear, or understand. Ridiculous. But the God in whose hand are your life breath and all your ways, you have not glorified. What a situation. So you're sitting here thinking you're powerful when you're actually pathetic. You're praising things that are not God, that are inanimate. And all the while you're doing that in the vessels of the very God who gives you every breath that you breathe. What a fool you are. But the God in whose hand are your life, breath, and all your ways, you have not glorified. Why are you where you are? Because God has allowed it. Because God has raised you up. And are you thankful? No. You're too busy praising these inanimate objects with your wives and your concubines and your posse. Praising yourself. Okay, what's this message? Then the hand was sent from him, and this inscription was written out. Now this is the inscription that was written out. Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin. This is the interpretation of the message. Mene, God has numbered your kingdom and put an end to it. Okay, that's not a good start if you're Belshazzar. That's not what you wanted to hear. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found deficient. I love how that's put. I like the older version even better. You've been weighed in the balance and found wanting. You do not measure up. Now, who would say that to a king? You know, you think about the kings and their grandeur and their glory. They've reached the height, the very top of the pyramid. No one tells them no. No one says that's a bad idea. They are the pinnacle. They're the paragon of humanity. But you've been weighed in the balance and you've been found wanting. You don't measure up. Perez, your kingdom has been divided and given over to the Medes and Persians. Then Belshazzar gave orders, and they clothed Daniel with purple and put a necklace of gold around his neck and issued a proclamation concerning him that he now had authority as the third ruler in the kingdom. The same night, Belshazzar, the Chaldean king, was slain. So Darius the Mede received the kingdom at about the age of 62. What is the legacy of Belshazzar? Well, he was this great king. Well, he wasn't even that, but he was a king of the, you know, even the Bible says, what's the Bible say about the Babylonians? They are the head of gold. You think the Romans are great? They're nothing. You think the Greeks are great? Sure, they're great. We have a lot of their cultures in our culture, a lot of the wisdom and so on and so forth. They're not anything. The Babylonians were greater. And he was a king of the Babylonians. Surely that is something to be remembered for. That is a great thing. No, that's not a great thing. The only thing he's going to be remembered for is that he was weighed in the balance and found lacking. That is to say, on that day of judgment, will he be on the right or on the left? What do you think? He's going to be on the left. Why? Because he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. And that will be his legacy. On the other hand, what about the other participant in this story? What about Daniel? Is his legacy going to be, oh man, that guy really was able to interpret dreams. He was able to interpret them so well that he was able to amount so much wealth, so many riches, so much power, so much authority, so many fine changes of clothing, so much jewelry. Everyone adored him. Everyone honored him. Even the pagans adored and honored him. And he, you know, he's a prophet, but he really lived his life in a secular job. He worked for a king. And he was able to fight his way to the top of the food chain in this ferocious environment, being a foreigner. What an incredible legacy. What a thing to leave behind. But none of that counts for anything. The only thing that he's going to be remembered for is that he's on the right hand. That's the only thing he wants to be remembered for. We're not going to remember on that day of judgment when Daniel's name is called. Man, I remember what great jewelry he had. I remember how resplendent his garments were. I remember how much people adored him. No, none of that will matter. The only thing that will matter, are you on the right or on the left? Are you blessed? Are you cursed? Is God going to say, well done? Or is God going to say, away from me? There's only one thing that matters for a king. There's only one thing that matters for a prophet. And there's only one thing that matters for every person. What is your relationship with God? So you say, well, I'm really winning in this life. I'm really doing well with money. I'm doing well with my job. I'm doing well with fitness. I'm doing well with all these things. I, by any reasonable measure, anyone would look at me and say, that guy, that girl is winning. But there's only one metric of winning. And in the converse, I could say, my life is a disaster. I've got nothing going for me. There's a fire around every corner. There's no hope for me. It's a disaster. I'm losing. But the person that thinks they're winning and the person that thinks they're losing both have to only look to one thing. Am I right with God? If you're right with God, you're truly winning. If you're not right with God, no matter what you think, you are losing. You're right with God, no matter what you think, you're winning. You're not right with God, no matter what you think, you're losing. We have to look forward to the day of judgment, the day that will come with all surety when we will be parted. The question becomes, am I going to go with heaven, with God to heaven for all eternity, or am I going to hell to be separated from God because I chose to be separated from God? From God with my actions when I openly rebelled against him. And this will be our legacy. This is going to be the only thing that people will remember. This is going to be the only thing that we will remember. This will be the only thing that lasts to the other side of that river when we cross the river and we enter into our eternal home, whether it be heaven or hell. So this is where our focus needs to be.
What's my focus? What's our normal focus?
Well, normally it's to, as I said earlier, the older you get, probably the more you start thinking about your legacy. How do we define our legacy? What am I leaving for my children? What am I leaving behind me? How will people remember me? What will they think about when they hear my name? In fact, we went to a dairy farm yesterday, and as we were waiting for the food, there was this little news story there, and the founder of the farm was talking about his legacy. And you know, the dairy farm's a fine legacy. Family-oriented entertainment, good food, supporting family business, fine, it's great. But that dairy farm is going to be forgotten. As good of a legacy as it is, it will not last. There's only one thing that that man will have in eternity, and that is, was I right in the sight of God, or was I not? And for us, we have to focus on becoming right if we are not right. And we have to focus on taking the things that encumber us, as we talked about this morning in Hebrews 12, the sins that so easily encumber us, removing those difficulties from us, to be able to focus on the things that actually matter. You sort the things that are most important, and you throw away the things that don't matter. You only focus on the things that really matter because, well, that's just logical, because your resources are limited. So I'm going to focus on becoming right with God, knowing that everything else, like a dream, will fade away. And the only thing that I'll be remembered for is, did I do evil in the sight of God, or did I do that which was good? So I hope this is an encouragement for us. If your life is a disaster, you can have salvation. You can have a legacy that so many, trust me, after that day of judgment, they would give anything to have that legacy. Kings, generals, the most powerful people in all the world would give anything to have the legacy if he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. Even if your life is a disaster, it's something that is within your reach. You just have to trust in God and to do what is right in his sight, and you have an inheritance with him in heaven forever.